Destination.
Breakfast time!
Hello, welcome to T-Bone and Tyvis. Can I take your order?
Just want a little breakfast.
Hey, you want some crabs? Because I got some of them.
Get ready to drive through the intersection of football, food, and fun.
Come on, Joe!
Featuring producer Dylan.
Who are the five best rappers of all time?
Special guests.
Are you serious?
And you. Wake up.
For what?
It's time for T-Bone and Tyvis.
Welcome in. Happy Friday to you. What's up? I'm T-Bone. He is not Tyvis for one more day.
Not yet.
Well, he is always going to be Joshua Perry. However, this is the final day of Joshua Perry joining me in relief of Tyvis Powell, who's been on, of course, paternity leave, but he will be returning on Monday. So, JP, I can't believe the 3 weeks has flown by like this.
It has absolutely flown by. It's been a pleasure to be able to hang out with you guys, and hopefully everybody gets their morning started off the right way listening to this program. But we are at the end of the road.
I know. Sadly. Crazy, right? Yeah. Sad, because I've had a good time working with you. I don't think we've done a lot of shows together before.
I don't know if we had done a show, like a full show.
Yeah, that's probably not. I know you've been on the show a lot this year. You pop in, you've been in studio, you've been on the phone, but like, yeah, doing a whole show. And this is what we were talking about before today. I was like, 3 weeks ago coming in that first Monday, I'm like, all right, this could either be really fun or it could be like
a long 3 weeks.
The first half hour, we're both like, oh man, this is not going well. This is going to take a while to get used to each other, whatever. But no, we hit it off right away. So
yes.
Like, I think it was a good choice by you and or Tyvis. I think, how'd that story go? Cause we weren't sure what to do when Tyvis was going to take his paternity leave. And then, as far as I understand it, you and Tyvis talked, and then
yes.
Tyvis came in to us. All I know is he was like, Joshua Perry wants to fill in when I'm gone. And I was like, great. That solves a big problem right there. But
yep.
How did that all work between you two?
It was basically the conversation of like, what are you going to do? And everybody knows Tyvis on this program, obviously. He's like, man, I don't even know if I'm going to take the leave. I'm like, you should take the leave. And he's like, yeah, we got to find somebody to fill in. And I'm like, well, I don't do a lot during the off season, and I had started, filling in on shows, and I was like, I think it'd be a fun thing to be able to get in there. And he's like, call Fish. And so he, called Fish, and I was like, would you guys be open to a little residency while Tyvis is adjusting to his third child being at home? And that's how we got down to that. So, fortunate it all came together. Like I said, I've had a blast with you guys.
I knew Joshua would be a good fit because his takes aren't better than Tyvis's. They're just different. Like, you got a vanilla ice cream being the alpha flavor versus like not eating bread. You got like Kurt Cignetti being the goat versus Giannis being the goat. Like, it's a lot of similar stuff being thrown around. It's just different.
That's exactly right.
So I knew Joshua would be a good fit on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's a sad thing that you're leaving us. However, it's a good thing that Tyvis is coming back. So
it
is. It's bittersweet. A bittersweet symphony, some might say. Is that a song either of you've ever heard?
Yes.
Okay.
I would have to hear it to be able
to. It's got the chorus violins is literally, in the background.
It's a bittersweet symphony of life. I think life is already.
I'm not sure I've heard that one.
Let's never do that again. How about that? So, yeah, that's. Yeah, but either case, that's where we're at right now. So, yeah, man, but it's been fun. Glad we got to do it.
It's been good.
Yeah, so now we still have 3 hours. Not like you're just leaving.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take my headphones off, and I'm going to drive home.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. LW, by the way, in the chat said there's a third chair. It doesn't have to end, T-Bone, Tyvis, and JP. Make it happen. So there you go. Have a third chair. I'm sure Fish has the budget for that.
Let's just go fund me for Joshua's salary.
It'd be like a $1,500 GoFundMe. I'd be sitting my happy ass right here.
Right.
That's how much you make a day here? Damn.
No, I don't want anybody to think that.
Good for you.
No.
I'm not getting that.
No. Gas money.
Apparently, U.S. senators listen to our show because I saw this from Ross Dellinger. Amendments are being finalized for the Protect College Sports Act. One of them comes from Senator Ben Ray Lujan, L-U-J-I-J-A-N. Not sure how to pronounce that. Anyway, he is a Democrat from New Mexico. Apparently, This applies to all athletic departments generating $80 million in revenue or above. So all the big boy schools are doing that, right? Like, what is OSU generating in revenue? I want to say it's over. It's definitely over $100 million.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Like, I thought it might be over $200 million. Yeah. I'd have to go look that up. But like, so this would definitely apply to the biggest athletic programs, right? But probably more than you think. It would require schools to use only athletic revenue or donations for all but the first $500 of or $500,000 of a coach's salary. That first $500,000 could be paid using like public funds from the school. Like as it stands right now, most universities, I think, do this anyway, which is they have their own budget based off their own revenue. They don't necessarily get a ton of revenue from the academic side, the business side of the school. That comes, a lot of these programs are self-sustaining, but this would just codify that to say you can't pay this coach with anything more than, you know, $500,000 from the public money. You can't be given, even though these guys are the highest paid public employees in the state.
Sure.
Most of that money's going to have to come from private donations or from your own revenues. So yeah, they just want to put that into law, but that would effectively cap a little bit of the earning that these guys could have. And, I think as Bo Bishop likes to say, I think we had that.
Yeah, I think we had it.
I think we said that. So,
yeah. So revenue for Ohio State Athletics, it was a banner year, $336 million.
Okay.
So, certainly they would have to find these funds, which you mentioned, like that's how a lot of schools do it. Like I know, for example, Michigan has endowments for the coaching positions, right? So it's like, you know, the Bob and Susie Turner endowed wide receiver coach.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So they,
I mean, here at Ohio State, you have Ross Bjork is the Eugene Smith endowed, like Gene Smith actually started that. But like,
so, you know, they've been finding money outside of the public funds to be able to do this, but it certainly makes this thing more interesting. And then you and I kind of talked about this every time I see these stories come out in collegiate athletics. I think, what is the most chaotic thing that could happen? And so I started immediately imagining a world where your big money booster is like, I don't want X, Y, or Z coach on staff anymore.
Yeah.
And the athletics people are like, no, the coach is in charge of that. Like, we're not going to just take your advice and fire the coach. And he's like, fine, I'm not giving you another penny. And then you have to start moving money around to figure out what to do, or you end up firing the guy. Yeah. That would be the interesting thing that comes out of this, but I think it makes sense. And I've always been, especially for the big boys who make a lot of money, the idea of using public funds when you can just use your own money that you have generated, like we should never be doing that in the first place.
Yeah. I think
some schools can't help it, right? Like some schools need to be able to use a little bit of both, right? Like MAC schools, for example, but I'm sure a lot of them wouldn't fall into this, but the big boys have to figure out a way to get it done on their
own. Well, and I think that does even the playing field a little bit, which to be clear, as an Ohio State fan, the less evening of the playing field, the better for me, because who's going to be at the top always is going to be Ohio State. Like I'm not worried about that. It's just from that's one discussion that we as Buckeye fans care about. There's this whole other discussion, which is, can the sport sustain itself? And that's why, I mean, it won't totally shock me if the Big Ten and the SEC break off and do their own thing at some point. I know in this legislation, they're trying to prevent that.
They're trying their hardest.
Yeah, they really don't want that to happen. They've got a lot of rules that would limit school. They actually have a rule in this thing as it sits right now that says if you, I'm trying to remember the number that you have to have, but it's basically like the Big Ten, the SEC.
I think it's $800 million.
Yeah, that you have like as a conference that you have in TV money. If that's your deal, then you cannot realign. You can that the conference is frozen if you make any more money than that. So again, I find it so interesting that like the people who run our institutions can find all these ways to limit what can be done when you make certain amounts of money when it comes to collegiate athletics. Can't find that as much when your name's Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, but whatever. That's a different discussion for a different day.
Uh-oh.
The point is, all that said to say, this they're trying to save college sports, air quotes, because they don't think it's sustainable the way we're going. Those are two different, you know, goals, right? What Ohio State and what big time schools want versus what the little guys want to be able to keep their program going. that's a discussion that's going to be ongoing. But anyway, this Save College Sports Act, the big highlight from this, other than what we just told you, is that now it's passed a committee so it can go to like a full Senate vote. That doesn't mean it's going to get passed. It means now it can be like, before it goes to that vote, it'll go to the floor. It'll be debated.
Yes.
People will rip out things, put in new things. So the bill is going to constantly be Frankensteined. But we're getting to a point where there may be a vote on it. And then as I went to bed last night, I saw this, like yesterday, all the articles, like, they're going to vote on it. They can vote on it. The Save College Sports Act takes another step towards getting passed. And then last night, there was a report that said, no vote until after the midterms. So it will literally and figuratively be a political football. Like, it will be one of those, like, do you want to save college sports? Then vote for Senator so-and-so. He believes the right way. Yeah.
So yeah, vote for Ken Paxton down in Texas.
the AG
who is running for Senate. Vote for him if you want to pass this.
Yeah, that's right.
Big Voice got your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bose sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gouty gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. You're listening to the best of T-Bone and Tybus. They're not here, but they're still here. You see, they never let you down. The band.
So it's the off season for college football. We know that.
Is there an off season anymore?
Well, I guess, you know, yeah, this is the off season, which has been dominated by, hey, let's let them gamble. Why not? And then, oops, never mind. Forget we did all that.
Right.
That's been most of what I've viewed as the college football off season. But you're right. There's camps. There's guys committing left and right. There's visits being go. There's crystal balls being shoved down our throats with all the, like, oh, this guy could be, he's 80% this way. He's 90% that way. Yeah, right. It's like all the recruiting stuff is happening, and then at least we don't have a second transfer portal because that could make it even more chaotic, right? Boy. Yeah, but then
Sorsby would have been in that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, and think about all the other guys who probably would have been too.
Yeah.
You know, when all that drama hit, there would have been a lot of quarterbacks who were just like, hey, for what it's worth, I'm available.
Dylan Raiola.
Oh, I saw someone did a mock-up of him and said Dylan Raiola showing up to Texas Tech in a track outfit to make, because if you missed it, there's the guy who is transferring from UCLA.
Yes.
Yes.
Who is like a quarterback. He plays football, but he also does run track. And he's like, no, I'm not transferring as a football player. I'm transferring as a track athlete.
Right.
However, I will play football at your school.
You're going to take up a football scholarship in that case as well.
He found a way to work the system to get his transfer in, which good for him. But this is something that happens in the offseason. We have these little debates and discussions. I hesitated to bring this up because I do feel like this is a guy trying for clicks, but I'll give him the click he wants. College Football with Sam. It's a podcast. You can go find it. He's got like 5,000 followers, all right? So I'm not pretending like this is the biggest podcast in the world or anything like that. But he made the case on his show that he thinks Ryan Day is obviously very good coach. We know that. But he makes the case that Ryan Day may actually be better than Urban Meyer.
Ohio State right now is the favorite to win the national title. And that is because of Ryan Day, who's 82-12 at Ohio State. You know how insane that is? I said a while ago that he's a better coach than Urban Meyer, and people didn't believe me, and there's probably people that still don't believe me. He is a better coach than Urban Meyer. And I know that close to for a fact because of the type of teams that he's had to face at Ohio State compared to the type of teams Urban Meyer had to face at Ohio State. Meyer in his career is a better coach than Ryan Day just because of the totality of his achievements. But the Ohio State Ryan Day is better than the Ohio State Urban Meyer because Ryan Day had to face Michigan when they were up. He had to face Penn State at least the same level, if not when Penn State was more up than on average when Meyer had to play them. He didn't have to play up Michigan State, but up Michigan or up Penn State is more deadly than up Michigan State.
I may have set that up wrong, but like what he said was Ryan Day is better than Urban Meyer. In case you didn't catch that, that's what he was talking
about. Okay.
Joshua, your era was when Urban Meyer was coaching,
right?
When you were playing.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said the Big Ten had a down Penn State and a down Michigan at that time. So it wasn't as good. Your thoughts?
So I think there are a couple of assumptions that are being made here. And I want to make it clear, like Ryan Day, top three coach in the game right now, he's been phenomenal. Right. But this is more of a defense of the Urban era of the Big Ten and what he did in that run than a, you know, poo pooing what Ryan Day has done.
Sure.
So the first assumption is that it's harder to win in the NIL and playoff access era of college football, which is what we're in right now and how we're kind of judging Ryan Day and his run these last few years. The second assumption is that the Big Ten just wasn't as good. And so I'll go with the second thing first. Michigan was down for a portion of it.
Yeah, they were.
Penn State was down for a portion of the Urban era. But there were also years where Penn State was right there knocking on the door of the college football playoff. They were winning 10 games a year once James Franklin got there pretty much his whole tenure. You remember Jim Harbaugh's first year. We went to play Michigan after we lost to Michigan State, by the way, which I'll address them in a sec. But we went to play Michigan. That was a top 10 matchup.
Yeah.
In the Big right. House. Right. Yeah. Like Michigan had a team that came to the horseshoe that was winning in into the 14 playoff. And Ohio State knocked them out of that. Right. So like we talk about, because we saw Michigan at the very height of their powers, no doubt, the last few years. But we talk about that entire era as Michigan was down the whole time they weren't. We talk about it as Penn State was down the whole time they weren't. Then you get to the Michigan State part of this. When I was at Ohio State, we lost four games. We lost two of those games to Michigan State. And the two times we lost to them, it knocked us out of a chance to win a title. That's how good those teams were. They went to a four-team playoff. They won a Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
And then you get to the Wisconsin part of this. Because it wasn't Michigan and Penn State, people are like, it wasn't as hard. Wisconsin, if you remember, I think it might have been 2017. They were the number three team in the country when they played Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. They were winning in the playoff.
Yeah.
And got knocked out.
Yeah.
Right. Like those Wisconsin teams consistently 10, 11, 12 wins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different way to think about it. But that era to me, there were really good, really competitive teams in the Big Ten that just weren't the biggest brands. And so we kind of look back and we're like, oh, it wasn't as good. But then there's the other part of this where it's like, is it actually harder to win in this era right now?
Well, I still think like, oh, well, Michigan and Penn State were down. It's like, oh, yeah, as opposed to now, Penn State, what do they do?
They were
just fire their coach because they're so down. Like, what are we talking about? Like Penn State is not like, oh, but then after that era, Ryan Day's been dealing with the top three Penn State program. Like,
on.
They haven't been
Penn State
good.
Has been the same. In their playoff appearance, by the way, they had the easiest path anybody could have had. They had SMU, played them in a home game, and then they played Boise State and made it to a semifinal.
Yeah.
Right? But like, had they not had that path, who knows? So right, it was basically the same Penn State
to your
from
point,
2016 on.
How many of these teams that are viewed as like not being that good in the Big Ten era? How good, if some of those teams were in a 12-team playoff.
Wisconsin would have been in?
Absolutely.
Michigan State made it in a 4-team playoff. Michigan would have been in multiple times.
Yes.
Penn State would have been in multiple times.
Right.
Northwestern would have gotten in.
Jeez, I didn't even think of that.
You didn't think about that.
Yeah, with Pat Fitzgerald, they probably would have had a year or two.
They probably would have had a year or two where they would have been in. And so that's kind of what I'm getting to this access era. I think it is harder to string together wins at the end of the year. But we're also seeing where it's, do you feel like there's a true dynasty right now? Because there was also the Alabama-Clemson thing going on.
Closest thing to a dynasty right now is Ohio State.
Right.
Like, where it's consistently every year top five program, and yet again, like he just said, Ohio State's the favorite to win the national championship.
Sure.
Again, like, that's how it will be probably for the foreseeable future is every year. And that is a testament to Ryan Day.
No doubt.
Like, he has continued the greatness of this program, but I still think it's very odd that there are some, this guy's not a Buckeye fan from what I understand, this College Football with Sam guy, he's just a podcaster, but like there are a lot of Buckeye fans who feel the need to make Ryan Day into, because he's here now, we have to like somehow turn him into the greatest coach of all time.
Right.
And all I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with just saying Ryan Day is excellent.
Yeah.
He is excellent. Let's pump the brakes on he's better than, like this guy's saying, better than Urban Meyer. First off, Ryan Day has only coached college football at Ohio State.
Right.
When he took the job, who handed him the program that was where that program had been? Urban Meyer.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean Ryan Day, the board on third base stuff, whatever. I'm not getting into all that.
No.
What I'm saying is Ryan Day has taken a program. He was given something that was already, I like cars. It was already, he was given a Ferrari,
right,
and he has maintained it.
He could have been Kalen DeBoer, where people are like, oh man, like this guy is just like, we're going backwards.
Yes.
Like nobody's ever been able to say that this program's gone backwards under Ryan Day.
You can compliment Ryan Day absolutely and say he took a finely tuned automobile and maybe even tuned it up more, has made it even better than it was when it was given to him. That's fair.
Right.
The idea that that is harder to do than what Urban did when he went to Bowling Green,
right,
when he went to Utah,
sure,
when he went here, Florida,
yeah,
and then now here where he won between Florida and Ohio State three national titles. Ryan Day has a plenty of time left to,
yes,
build that legacy into something. But like the conversation about greatest college football coach of all time involves Nick Saban and Urban Meyer for a reason. Ryan Day is not there yet.
Right.
Still a thing that allows you to say eventually Ryan Day could get there. So, but let's just calm down on he's the greatest. He's better than Urban Meyer. I hesitate. I don't think that's where we're at right now.
I'll give you one more for Urban, too. Is that 2012 season, if we didn't have the Bowl Bams my freshman year.
Oh, God, yeah.
We're playing Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. That was Manti Te'o Notre Dame, right?
It'd have been two titles, yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Right.
It would have been in year, what was that, year one for him?
Yeah.
So, in year one, he would have won it. You don't think that would have even further affected the recruiting and every trajectory you guys were already on?
Yeah, and like that to me is a lost year when we talk about his legacy a little bit, just because you couldn't finish it off in the postseason.
Yeah. That's exactly.
I don't agree with this guy, and you guys didn't make this point, but I feel like a lot of Ohio State fans, when you say, well, why is Urban Meyer better than Ryan Day? They're immediately going to say 7-0. And to this guy's point, would we perceive Urban Meyer a little bit differently if he had to play some better Michigan teams and he wasn't 7-0 against Michigan?
But my argument is we can't have that discussion.
Right, we can't have that hypothetical.
Well, no. It's we can't live in a world where what probably this guy and other people would say is when Ohio State and Michigan play, what's the first thing everybody says about that game? Throw the records out.
Yeah.
So you can't have throw the records out argument, and then when a guy goes 7-0 in that game, you're like, oh, well, the records actually show that these were not as good of Michigan teams. It's like,
right.
But throw them out, because I've watched plenty of crappy Michigan teams beat this Ohio State team. 7-0 is absolutely something that matters.
And I guess the other part of that, too, is like the 2019 Michigan team was bad. 2020, obviously, they ducked it. And then you had the run where Michigan was doing their thing. But you had them as a 3-touchdown favorite.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so Urban had those kinds of teams and handled them.
Yeah.
Is it the flip side of
that
conversation, too. And once again, like, this is not what Ryan hasn't done well.
No.
The other part of this is I just don't think the other teams in the conference got the credit for how good they may or may not have been, because Ohio State was just that dominant at the time, too.
Yeah.
And this is still a dominant run for Ohio State. It just looked a little bit different when it was Urban.
Yeah, totally. This is nothing against Ryan Day. This is just, let's stop trying to turn Ryan Day's tenure into he's the greatest college football coach of all time. He may end up going down as that eventually. It's harder to win in this era, I think, because of Portal and all the other stuff you have. But let's also not forget, which school is going to be in the best position every year when it comes to Portal and NIL? Every other school in the country would kill to be Ohio State. It's a system that changes college football, but it makes it better for the schools like Ohio State, if anything, not worse.
T-Bone and Tybus is sponsored by Capital Ford of Columbus. Find your dream ride and get approved fast at CapitalFordOfColumbus.com. Mike Rowe here, Men in Ice.
Ben Stiller just landed, and this is what I told him last night.
Wait, whoa. And I told him last night.
Yeah.
Rothman and Ice, weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. This is the best of T-Bone and Tybus. Yes, this is pre-recorded, but Tybus is so dedicated, he's still here, running the board. The Fan. Sometimes it's better if people just shut up.
Shut up!
It's time for Morning Breath.
All right. This is a little bit of loser talk. I'm going to forewarn you from an SEC coach. Steve Sarkisian was talking about the fact that ultimately playing some of the big names in college sports, while he really, really wants to do it, he's not so sure if games like a future scheduled home and home between Texas and Notre Dame, if that game will happen unless changes are made to college football. Here's Steve Sarkisian.
Knowing we have Notre Dame still scheduled with a home and home, is what's going to happen to the CFP? That's the hard part, coach. Is it going to expand? Are we going to go to 16? Are we going to go to 24? And is that then going to maybe, say, entice us back to keeping those non-conference games? Because right now, it's a little bit of a flux. And we're going to learn more. You know, is the CFP going to adjust some of those metrics to your point of what the schedule looks like? Because I can tell you, and you and Mark know this, like when you're at Florida, when you're at Alabama, when you're at Texas, when you're at Ohio State, those players and coaches, we want to play in those games.
Yes.
We love those games. You know, we love those preseason games to say, hey, I want to go play against the best players in the country, the guys that I was on recruiting trips with, that the coaches that I respect a ton for the way they get their teams prepared to play. I just don't want to be punished for it.
That is Steve Sarkisian on the Triple Option podcast with Urban Meyer, Mark Ingram, and Rob Stone. But yeah, no, he wants to play these games, Joshua. He really does. But unless the playoffs change, I don't know if we can do it.
So the only point of slight defense I'll give is, and he lost to Florida. That's what everybody's like, oh, they lost to Florida last year. But playing Ohio State in week one, that was one of the reasons why, right? And so I get where he's like, yeah, I mean, we got to get certain assurances if we want to make sure this can happen. The flip side of that for me is I really don't give a damn, because everybody told me with each round of playoff expansion that we were going to have better matchups in the non-conference because you had more wiggle room to lose games. And all I'm seeing right now is schools being like, oh, we're canceling that series. We're canceling that. We're canceling that. Because they're all scared, and they know that the committee will just rank everybody, all of the undefeated teams, all of the one-loss teams, all of the two-loss teams. They don't make hard decisions. And so these guys are like, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So I get where he's coming from, but I hate it because everybody lied to me about what was going to happen because the postseason got bigger.
Well, yeah, I'm with you on that. Here's what I don't like is this whole notion that college football coaches have, this entitlement I feel like some of them have to, we need assurances of playoff. We need an assurance of we'll have a playoff spot even if we play these tough games. Uh-huh. I know why they say it, mm-hmm. right? Because like in the NFL, you don't get an assurance that you'll make the playoffs. What you get is if you win your division,
right,
you're in. There is a clear, if you do this goal, you get into the playoffs and no one can take that away from you. And my argument would be it's a lot tougher than winning a, you know, four-team division, obviously.
Sure.
But if you win your conference, you're getting to the playoffs. And in a conference like the SEC, if you win your conference or in your conference championship game, you're going to the playoffs. They don't focus on that. They focus on, and this is where I think it's loser talk, is, well, what if I'm not in the conference championship? And what if I'm not in, you know, like the third best team? Then what happens? And it's like, well, at some point, man, you're Texas. You're not coaching at McNeese State. Like, I don't understand why these coaches don't look at that as like, great, what an opportunity. Let's go out there and prove to the world what we can do.
That's not
it. They look at it as, how can I make the process the easiest for me to get into the playoffs?
And by the way, the only reason people are starting to do this is we did the complete opposite of what was supposed to happen when the playoff got bigger.
Yep.
The playoff gets bigger. We're supposed to get more of these games that mean a lot. Right. But as the playoff got bigger, the emphasis all shifted to the playoff. So now people are like, oh, man, I don't want to lose because my job security and right. I have to make it. And so now we've got all this loser talk, as you're mentioning. And nobody, by the way, people are starting to not care about what happens in the regular season as much anyway, because they just want to watch the dumbass tournament that mm-hmm. happens at the end of the year.
Yep.
So once again, I understand how we got here. It's just disappointing to me that we did that, because everything that we used to enjoy, which was Ohio State plays Texas early in the year, and that might be do or die. And we were fine with that because you could still play in a New Year's Six bowl game if you won the rest of your games.
Yeah.
And we used to like the Fiesta Bowl trophy. We used to like the Rose Bowl. We used to like the Sugar and the Peach, right? Like, we used to love the Orange Bowl. We don't like that anymore. And yeah. It's bothersome.
It is. I just feel like expanding the playoffs, a lot of people had the hope that that would allow us to enjoy more, not carefree matchups, but like Ohio State and Texas will do stuff like that more often. You will
right.
see more of those games because those schools will all say, that's all right, we're probably both going to make the playoffs. But now what's happened is the SEC has gaslit themselves with their mm-hmm. own. They got high on their own supply, where now it's like our gauntlet that we play in
yeah.
the SEC.
Yeah.
We have to play 9 conference games now. Our players might die. And it's like, all right, man. Like, the SEC's tough. But yeah. to act like it's just a quadruple variation from, like, the next toughest conference, that's not true. Like, It is slightly tougher, maybe, than the rank and file Big Ten.
Arkansas still plays in that conference.
Yeah.
Right?
And by the way, you guys struggled with them last. A lot of teams, not Texas necessarily. I don't remember what they did against Arkansas, but a lot of teams.
I know Notre Dame didn't.
A lot of teams struggled with them. Notre Dame did not. Exactly right.
Well, and Sark's been banging this drum the whole offseason, and part of his argument is like, oh, like, yeah, we lost to Ohio State, but we also lost in the Swamp, which is a really tough place to play.
God.
The past couple of years, the Swamp has not been a really tough place to play.
Yeah.
And he wants to have his cake and eat it, too, when it comes to scheduling teams like Ohio State and Michigan and Notre Dame. And he's like, hey, we scheduled these teams, so we should get the benefit of the doubt.
But that's what people told them when it expanded, though. That's why I don't fault him for feeling this way. That's what everybody said was going to happen, is you could play it, and we're not going to penalize you as much because it is a 12-team field.
I feel like a logical person would say the reason why you scheduled these games because if you win them, mm-hmm. when it comes to the end of the season, that's on your resume.
What happens if you lose that game, though?
No, but that's where I'm calling it loser talk. Yes. It's like they look at it as, yeah, but what if I lose?
I understand that.
I don't know any college football. Like, would Urban allow you guys to say, coach, what if we lose this game? What happens then? Like, I know the logic. I know the reality of it. But, like, what happened to the coaches who are like, we're not planning on losing these games. I'm not afraid of it.
They all died when the BCS died. They all died when the 4-team playoff died. And now we get this loser talk, and then we get people pretending to care that Iowa and Minnesota is a big game because it might have playoff implications. We know good and damn well neither one of those teams are winning a title.
Yes, like we want to take the focus off of OSU Michigan and put it on those games.
Exactly.
To your point, that's what 2014 playoff will do. Is now all these Texas Ohio State games will have no juice to them,
right?
Because there's no stakes.
There's no stakes.
I need stakes on a game. I need to know that it's impactful. And the more we expand, the more guys like Sark will be happy. But the less we're going to have impactful college football games, it'll still matter. Between we want to beat Texas,
right.
We want to beat Michigan, all that stuff. But it's going to cause those games that we've always thought to mean so much. And like, boy, if you lose this game, that could be the end of your season. You may not go to the playoffs. You may not have a championship chance. Well, now that's all over. Like that, you'll still have a chance to do all that stuff. And I don't get it. But your point you brought up earlier about, I think what a lot of these coaches lean into is the fact that they know Texas is going to get picked because, well, we're Texas.
Right.
If we, like, I think your boy Kurt Cignetti, who has like clearly revolutionized the game, I think the fact that he came in and said, I'm playing nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Do something about it. I don't care. He went out and won a national championship that way. Now all these copycats are like, let's go do it Cignetti's way, which Kurt Cignetti did that at Indy freaking Anna. Like, he didn't do it at Texas, Notre Dame, Ohio State, because he's trying to build something there. To defend him a little bit, he said, what's the benefit for me trying to go play every big dog?
What's the benefit for any of the big brands if it's going to hold you out? Like, the whole idea is not to get held out.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is now the problem is Indiana proved that you don't have to have a big brand.
Yes.
You can play nobody. As long as your record's good, you'll be in and you have a chance to prove yourself.
That's the way it was always going
to
be, though. As long as you were in a power conference, you could have played Olentangy High School, Pickerington North, and Marysville. And as long as you were in the Big Ten or the SEC and you won your games there, you were going to be fine.
Yeah, well, I guess it's just... At some point, this is where you need someone whose whole interest in scheduling is not preserving their own job. Like the NFL, Roger Goodell doesn't care if you as a coach get fired. They're going to put a schedule together that's going to hopefully serve a whole bunch of different benefits, but like it's going to create good matchups. You don't have that in college football. It's not centralized.
Well, I think the argument for programs like Texas and Sark now is like, okay, we'll play a cupcake regular season schedule. You get your marquee matchups in the playoffs now.
In the SEC, where we're forced to play certain teams in the SEC. And then they all complain every single time they get more than like two premier SEC programs on their schedule.
The amount of complaining that's getting ready to happen in that conference, going to 9 conference games, half the conference
going
to be toting an extra L. Oh, my God. It's going to be insufferable.
Because they thought when they did that, they were going to get guaranteed like 5 playoff spots and expand to like 16 or 24. And it hasn't happened.
You played yourselves.
Good for them. good. Couldn't happen to a nicer conference.
SEC.
Yeah.
Matty Ice is currently bathing himself in creamy jalapeno dip.
And I've officially run out of ways to tease this show. Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan.
Need a new ride before...
T-Bone and Tybus is sponsored by Capital Ford of Columbus.
A thing that's like, this will make a meal for a family. It's talking like a family of four, and I'm in the family. So I count as like three right off the bat.
Mornings on The Fan. It's the best of T-Bone and Tybus.
I know what you're thinking. This is so good you can't believe it's pre-recorded.
But it is. So if a comment hits and we don't respond, that's why. The Fan.
Good weekend here in the city.
Well, Father's Day this weekend, too.
Oh, yeah. Happy Father's Day to everybody, too.
Screw those guys.
I know. It's like, hey, you listen. What's the hottest restaurant for brunch right now? Got plenty of reservations for Sunday. You can walk right on in. You can walk in. You don't even need to book a reservation.
I thought so much about Mother's Day. And like, I have, my mom and dad are still living, right? So like, I thought a ton about Mother's Day because I'm married to a mother. And also I have my mom and all that. But now that I'm a father, I don't think as much about Father's Day, not because of my dad, but because for me, I'm just like, well, I don't need, whatever. I don't care. Like, I'm just glad to be a dad. But like, I don't think about it the same way as I think about what am I going to do for my wife and for my mom. So like for dad, I do have thoughts on what I'm getting him. I do have to pick up his gift still. But like, yeah, I'm going to see dad on Sunday. But happy Father's Day to everybody. But I don't think about it for myself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm not sitting there like, yeah, what's everybody going to do for me? Like, yeah. I have like no expectations.
Yeah, like for me on Sunday, I'm going to take Gianna to see Toy Story 5.
Right. That's You're going to just be a father.
Yes.
That's what you,
that's right. I'm not going to go see Toy Story for me. It's for her.
Yeah, of course.
Meanwhile, on Mother's Day, the moms be like, I don't want to see anybody. I'm going out to the spa. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Yeah. I'm not going to be a mom.
Yep, that's right. At my little Father's Day celebration today, I'm going to watch the U.S. play Australia. I'm going to go hang out with some buddies, go get some drinks in. Should be a fun time. But I noticed this. The World Cup has done something to the NFL that I think is great. I'm curious how you feel about it. So all these NFL stadiums to convert for the World Cup, FIFA requires them, whether they have artificial turf, concrete, or, I don't know, gravel, they have to change to actually natural turf. Natural grass has to be the surface they play the World Cup on. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's the rule. If you want to host a FIFA World Cup game, that's what you have to do. Well, go figure. Some of these stadiums are indoors. Some of these stadiums have artificial turf the rest of the year. But now that they put in a regular turf, they have systems. They can put sprinklers in. Mm-hmm. They can put little grow lamps that they roll out on the field to grow the grass to keep it healthy.
People got those in their basement, too.
Hey, that's, you know, that's right.
Where are we at?
Thank you. So that's now showing a lot of the players that, hey, wait a second. You can grow grass for FIFA for a month, but you can't grow grass for us? Did you know this stat? I didn't know it. NFLPA says 92% of players, when they asked a poll, would you rather play on natural surfaces or artificial surfaces, they said natural grass.
Yes.
92% of players have said that.
Yep.
I mean, you played, I can't speak to the differences, you played on artificial turf here at the Shoe, and you, I don't know, what was the surface you played on in San Diego? Was it natural at the time? You were.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. So like, but you played on natural surfaces in the Big Ten and everywhere else. Like, what was your preference?
I love a natural grass field. It just feels better on your body. Like, people don't realize how hard turf is. And so, you know, just your joints clanking around on it. It's like basketball players. I give them all the credit in the world for running up and down on the hardwood all day. I'm not doing that. So when you would get on grass, like, certainly it would feel easier on your joints. But the grass, the biggest benefit there is when you plant your foot and let's say it gets stuck and you got some momentum going. The grass just tears, right? Your feet kind of dig into the surface and it's got some give to it. You get stuck in the turf, ACL gone.
Yeah.
ACL gone.
Did you see Travis Bazzano with the Guardians the other night? I forget where they were, but he was trying to field a ball at second and he like dug his foot into the turf. And I'm not kidding. Like a 4-foot divot of grass came up and people were like, what the hell's wrong with their grass? What do they do there? And yeah, that seemed like a failure, but the point was, if it was not grass, I don't know how much power he put down, but I don't know what happens to his leg in that situation, right?
Might like snap.
Well, yeah, like you don't know, but and still injuries happen on grass.
No doubt.
Like natural grass is, by every study they've done, the Players Association did a study on this. They found that, and this was quoted by J.C. Treader back in the day. They did a study from 2012 to 2018. that showed the players suffered a 28% higher rate of non-contact lower extremity injuries when playing on turf versus natural grass. More specifically, non-contact knee injuries occurred at a 32% higher rate. Non-contact foot and ankle injuries were a whopping 69%, nice, more than if they were on grass. Foot and ankle injuries, almost 70% higher incidence rate on turf, on artificial turf. Here's my question. If you're an NFL owner, yes, you make billions of dollars. You're probably worth billions of dollars. This is going to cost you more money to maintain natural surfaces in cold weather cities, in cities where you have a dome, but it can be done. You're proving it with the World Cup right now, at least with the dome situation. Why wouldn't you want to spend the extra money to give your players a better chance of staying healthy? Not because you care about the longevity of their ligaments or I'm sure you do, but like cynically, don't you just want to have a football team that has more healthy players on it more often?
I mean, do you
wouldn't that be a good thing?
Do you want Luke Combs traipsing around your natural grass field and they got to pull out the big stages and all the stanchions and whatnot? And they got to now your stuff's all torn up.
See, that's
now your stuff's all torn.
That's the problem, is that they want to do all this other stuff in the stadium. It's just easier. It's more convenient for the people moving stuff around.
You just said the words easier. Mm-hmm. And I would say cheaper.
Yeah,
because here's the thing. There are lots of people who would gladly be paid to be full-time turf maintenance people for the right price who will deal with the fact that Luke Combs has his truckloads of stuff that they have to put down, and then they have to take it all back up, and then they got to rehab the grass, and they're spending 18-hour days trying to fix this grass for the game that's coming up in 2 weeks. It costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And these billionaire owners are so damn cheap. They want to charge you and me and everybody else all this money to go there and pay to watch these games, but they don't want to do the basics to give their team the best competitive edge to be healthy. Like Aaron Rodgers running out on that field and then blowing his leg out on the terrible Jets turf that every guy in the NFL who's ever played on it said that's the worst turf in the league.
Yeah, but that was more age, like doing it that early.
The man went into
the dark and it didn't even help.
That's true. I'm just saying, the Jets have had so many injuries there.
Yes.
And yet their owner doesn't want to change the grass because it's like he'll do it for FIFA, but he won't do it for his own team. Makes no sense.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. This is how these guys think. Like it's harder to have a multi-purpose venue when you are constantly having to bring the grass kids in to help you fix your turf.
I don't understand it. I mean, like at least, and I don't like it that the college argument is this, like I don't feel like at Ohio State you should ever have to cut corners on cost. But the argument is at least, well, hey, these athletic budgets are getting out of control and we're trying to find, you know, maintaining turf. I get it why high schools do it too. Yeah. It's way cheaper to maintain artificial turf.
Absolutely.
I cannot hear it when you're taking public dollars. The Haslam's taking $600 million to build a stadium and then say, oh yeah, we can't afford to like have fake or real grass in there. Yes, you can. We gave you all the money from the state's coffers to do it.
Nah.
So just put a little couple extra million on it and figure it out. Like it boggles my mind that they won't do something that simple when there's a clear competitive advantage to keeping your players healthier so you can actually have the roster you built.
But maybe some of these guys are hoping that the visiting players come in and lose that Achilles. maybe that's where they think the advantage comes.
You're probably right.
You mentioned with Aaron Rodgers, it was probably the turf. You say it's old age. I think it's because he wasn't on his regular dosage of ivermectin anymore.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
Yeah. The horse goo.
Yeah. Probably right. Yeah. Yes. Probably what it
was. His Achilles, they were weak. They were weaker.
That's right.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day.